Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello.
Hello.
Sitting here in my dressing gown today.
Oh, you are, yeah.
Very Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You have got bottoms on as well, I noticed.
I didn't until you arrived.
Oh, you are
These
so...
These are for your benefit.
You are so nice to me. You are so nice. Thank you. Thank you. It's really respectful.
Thank you. I want you to know this isn't a chest wig.
Oh, I wasn't looking at your chest, but now I am.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
nice.
Can you tell it's not a wig?
I can tell it's
It's more a smattering, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a wig.
No.
It'd be a weird wig to buy.
So I can tell you a weird thing that happened.
Yeah, go on.
On Friday, I started experiencing chest pain.
Okay.
In my left-hand side.
Is that the heart side?
Yeah, okay. It's a bad side.
Yeah, okay.
And it was round the back, into my shoulder and a little bit of my arm as well.
Oh,
God. And it was worse when I breathed in.
Okay.
So I was out with my son at the time. I got home, put him to bed. I'm lying on his bedroom floor waiting for him to go to sleep. I'm thinking, I wonder if I'm dying. But I'm also thinking, I'm not a hypochondriac because I know some hypochondriacs like my mother-in-law. And that's a very different thing.
Okay.
That's people who are the doctors all the time. But I am somebody who is very capable of spiraling when there's something a little bit wrong with me.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm lying there and I'm looking up chest pain. Oh, it could be anything. It could be muscular. It could be all this other stuff. I'm not going to be too worried. And then I think I should probably take my blood pressure though.
Mm.
So I have a history of hypertension. So I crawl out of his room so as not to wake him up.
Mm.
And then he goes, "Dad, where are you going?" I'm just going to get something. I'll be back in a second.
Mm.
So I crawl into my bedroom and then bring back this blood pressure machine and check my blood pressure by torchlight of my phone.
Mm.
"Dad, what's that noise?" "Oh, it's nothing, son." Okay. Look at the reading. And it is disturbingly high. It's like 186 over 122.
Okay.
So it's a Google. At what point should you contact a medical professional?
Mm.
And I'm well past that point, as it turns out, or I'm past that point, as it turns out. So I think, well, when I've had my BP done before, I know from going to the doctors, they say, "Oh, let's just wait 5 minutes."
Okay.
So I wait 5 minutes, check it again, exact same reading. I just give it another five.
Oh, God. Okay.
Same again. So I think, oh, I wonder if I'm about to die.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'm about to have a major cardiac incident.
Mm.
But Sarah's in Cardiff doing a show.
Oh God, okay.
So I try calling the babysitter. She doesn't answer. I then have to call the next door neighbour and say, "Are you home?" She says, "Yeah." I said, "You wouldn't mind sitting in our house for a bit while I pop to A&E? And I felt so uncomfortable doing it that part of me thought, "Oh, maybe it'd be better to just die."
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah. That's a hard thing to ask.
Yeah.
And so, it shouldn't be.
No. So she comes over and I go to the hospital. And It's very weird because instead of speaking to someone, you arrive now, you do it all on a screen.
Okay.
So I have to sort of type in what's wrong with me.
God.
And then I sit there in the A&E and it's Friday night, which I think is one of the bleaker nights in accident and emergency, isn't it? There's a lot of people are making a lot of noises.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's one of those. Then the nurse comes and she takes my blood pressure in my left arm. And it is lower than any point in my adult life.
What?
She then takes it in the right arm and it's higher than the numbers I was getting at home.
What's going on?
Well, I then see like all the colour go from her face. And she said, okay, I'm just going to go and speak to somebody. I said, is everything all right? She said, this could mean different things. It's odd when there's a discrepancy, so we don't know, so we need to do some tests. I said, but what are you testing for? And there's something called an aortic aneurysm, where if you've got it, they need to do surgery on you straight away.
Mm.
So, and it's just, and she is perfect. And I sort of have to wheedle this information out of her in a certain way. But she says, you know, we just need to do some tests. So I'm sat there while she goes to arrange these tests. And, you know, they come and do an ECG on me. And I think, oh, I think I probably am going to die.
This is awful.
Yeah. It was horrible. And I'm hoping that what is detracting from the bleakness of it is the fact that I'm sitting here telling you about it.
Yes, yes.
So,
yeah. You know. If there's a ghost opposite me, I'd be more nervous.
So they do this ECG, and then while I'm waiting for them, and then they need to repeat it half an hour later and do some blood tests. And I'm thinking, oh God, I should probably I need to sort of leave some kind of message behind for my son.
No. Is this what you're thinking?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Because, you know, sort of talk through, and she's really, you know, she said it could be any number of things, but we need to eliminate that it could be this aortic aneurysm. And I'm thinking, but what, you know, what media? So I go into the lavatory and try and record a nice video on my phone. And it's not, you know, always be kind to people. You know, it's just like, I just say, hey, if I'm stuck in the hospital and I don't get to watch Doctor Who with you tomorrow, you know, just a little message.
Okay.
And then I've sort of think, oh, that's not good, but I can't really do a second take. I could probably put it into iMovie and, you know, do some jump cuts, but I never like those things when people do it on TikTok or Instagram Reels. So then I
was thinking of doing jump cuts and like, okay, yeah.
So then I type out a message for him in my notes. But then I think, but how would anyone ever know it was there?
Oh, yeah.
But maybe those would be my last words. My PIN code is... And look in notes.
Yeah.
Don't look at most of them. They'll make no sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I type out this note thinking, you know, trying to not make it too heavy or anything, but thinking this is serious because it feels like at a bare minimum I've had a heart attack or I'm about to have a heart attack at this point.
Oh, my God.
And then they come and do my bloods again. And this gap has completely closed up and it's just both arms have got hypertension in both of arms.
Okay.
There's still a bit of a gap, which they're worried about. So now it's looking like maybe, and they get the ECG results back and there's something a bit odd about it, but the nurse isn't sure how odd it is, right? So at this stage, I'm just thinking, oh, I'm fine. So this is just basically a cardiac episode, or I'm about to have one and I'm in a hospital and that's probably a good place to have a heart attack.
Okay.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
And I have let Sarah know by this stage and she's you know, she's on her way back.
Okay. So,
and then get to see a doctor when she gets there. He arranges a CT scan because they really want to be on top of whether this aneurysm has happened or not. So while I'm waiting for that, they look at the bloods. They say, okay, I've looked at the ECG and actually it's just the AI that was saying there's an oddity there. I don't think there's anything to worry about there. So I think probably we're looking at the blood suggests you've had something called a pulmonary embolism. Now, I remember my mum had one of those and it wasn't good, but it wasn't, you know, the worst thing either. So, okay. So at this stage, I'm in a bed, in a bay on A&E with my little nightie on. Oh. I look good in those things.
Do you?
Yeah. And, And then they sent me off for a CT scan. I quite like a CT scan.
I don't think I've ever had one.
Oh, I've had many.
Have you? Oh, no, I don't think I have. What is it when you go in that, like, is it a big X-ray machine?
Yeah, but it looks futuristic. You look like you're about 15 years in the future.
Okay.
Like, very white machine, big circle. You look like you're inside of a Dyson fan.
Okay.
Yeah. And they do this, and then I go back and lie in this bed, and I'm feeling rotten at this stage. And then Sarah's, in fact, when I get back, Sarah's had to lie down in the bed.
Right.
So I have to turf her out.
Was she reluctant or...?
Yeah, I think she would have appreciated me leaving there for a bit. And then the doctor comes in and says, oh, it's not a pulmonary embolism. We got the CT scans back. And, you know, not to make light of this because it's severe enough that it's showing up on a CT scan, which it wouldn't normally, but it's basically a chest infection or a pneumonia or something.
Oh, God.
So I was delighted. That was a wild ride to go on. So I went from, I think I'm about to die, to, oh, I've either had or I'm about to have a heart attack, and then, you know, that's going to probably change my life a little bit, make me take stock of a few things, to, ooh, pulmonary embolism, that isn't very nice, to, oh, chest infection. Like, unless I tell this story, nobody is taken a chest infection seriously.
No.
Sympathy for
it. Got a chest infection. Oh, right.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah. I told Sarah's friend Bella, and she said, I mean, basically, that's a narcissist's cold.
What? I mean, I think there's a bit more than that. But like, yeah.
So I'm on a bunch of antibiotics, and the doctor's like, you know, I just want to be clear here. This isn't just a chest. It's a nasty one. You're going to feel like you've been hit by a truck for a couple of weeks. But I can get no sympathy for this.
But were you ill? Do you feel ill beforehand? This feels bizarre.
Well, I was feeling all this pain, remember?
Yeah, but pain. But like, did you have a cold?
No, and I haven't. I can feel like a little bit chesty, but no, I feel, this, you know, I don't feel good. I feel like we, so... So that happened on the Friday night. On the Monday, because I've just had basically a big scare, Sarah's now trying to get me to move a little bit more. So we go for a walk.
Right.
And I got breathless after about, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes. I was like, can we just slow down a little bit? And Sarah just got annoyed with me and went for a walk on her own.
You got a chest infection.
No.
You should be going for a walk on a chest infection. You should be resting.
I know. Well, that's what the doctor said.
Yeah.
But yeah, no... No sympathy for old Lloyd here with his chest infection. Mm. Yeah, he did use the word pneumonia at one stage, which I think you get a little bit more sympathy for the word pneumonia.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, maybe so you like, should like yeah. move more towards that.
And I don't know if anybody is, you know, if you're listening to this and you're any kind of medical professional, is there a word that I can use instead of chest infection that's going to get me...
More sympathy.
More sympathy,
yeah. That'd be good for you to know.
Yeah. But so it's on the way out... I stuck my head into the staff nurses, you know, the one who'd originally done my blood pressure. And I just put my thumb up and went, chest infection.
Oh.
And she burst out laughing at me.
Yeah, it's funny.
And I feel like I've just like wasted everybody's time.
Oh. It's better than going thumbs up, terrible wind. I think chest infection's better.
Okay, shall we hear from the drifters?
Well, I've got an update first on whether there are still any Sharons about from Paul. Just a quick note to say that there are Sharons still about. I can confirm that because my cousin is a Sharon, and what's more, she is the least drifter person in the world. Just a quick example, if you're interested. When Sharon was injecting insulin, she's diabetic, in the ladies' loos one time, another lady in the loo saw her and gave her an utterly deathly look of disgust, presumably assuming my perfectly innocent diabetic cousin was injecting heroin. Now, as a drifter myself, I would have simply skulked away, muttering under my breath about imbeciles. However, no, Sharon immediately raced out to confront the lady and explain madness. It turned out the lady had already guessed and was very apologetic. I think I would assume, and I've never seen anyone injecting like a diabetic injecting. I would assume
I'd be able to tell.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think I'd be able to tell.
Have you watched the Pete Doherty Louis Theroux thing?
I haven't, and I really want to. It's on my list.
Yeah, it's good, but it's like a bit heartbreaking as well in all these different ways.
Good but heartbreaking. That's my thing.
Yeah. Sharon. So there are still Sharons. I think there are fewer, though.
Well, look, let me carry on, because on the same subject, from Gary, the secret every courier, that's Hermes, by the way, I was delivering to the masses and heard you talking about the lack of popularity of the name Sharon. So I immediately started checking the names on all my deliveries to see if I had a Sharon on my round. Sure enough, there was one. This was out of over 100 packages that day. But on the basis of this very select sample, it's hopefully not dying out yet.
But I'd like to know what the number of Sharons was in 1997.
Well, you're about to. This did get me thinking that I once found something online that showed you how popular certain names are recently. So I did some Googling and can confirm the following. Since the year 2000, there have been 772 babies named Sharon. There have been 865 babies named Gary. There have been 8,281 babies named Annabelle. There have been 10 babies named Jeff. And there have been 34 babies named Daenerys. So there you have it. Jeff is a less popular name than a fictional character that burned King's Landing, spoiler alert, to the ground.
So thank you for that. It's made me feel like a rare bird.
Yeah, it's a rare bird.
But I just want to say about the Sharons. My question isn't, are there babies being born called Sharon? I feel that in the 90s, I was encountering a lot of people my age or above called Sharon. Now, I'm 50, so there's going to be a bit of a drop off.
Yeah.
You know, as we just heard.
Yeah.
Life is fragile.
Yeah.
You don't know what's coming. But what I don't think is there's been like a mass extinction of Sharons.
Right.
So
Where have they gone?
Is it like the Hitlers, where a bad apple has meant, oh, I'm going to change this?
You think they changed their name?
I don't know.
Okay, so what we need to know is, were you a Sharon and have you since changed your name?
I'm just laughing at Hitler, the bad apple. Oh, yeah.
That was a very light term for it, isn't it? Bad apple. Apple, bad.
The one bad apple in the Hitler family.
Bruised.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to an actual email. This is from, no disrespect to the ones before. This is from Distinguished Lord One-Armed Freddy. Due to the ongoing cost of living crisis this year, I took the decision to downgrade my weekly shop from middle-class supermarket to a budget German alternative, one of the ones that have a lot of union flags on their signage so as not to alienate the more dreadful members of society. I like the supermarket, and while I can't guarantee it will always stock the items I either want or need, I enjoy the slightly alien feel of some of the produce. It's like going to a supermarket on holiday.
Oh, the best feeling.
Yeah. Over the months, I have developed a hack little stand-up comedy routine for myself about, amongst other things, the speed of the checkout operators and how it's completely impossible to bag your items at the same speed they scan them. This kept me entertained, and I refined it enough to perform it at my wife. Note, I am not in any way a comedian and would find talking on stage in front of other people a nightmare. I'm just a fan of comedy and like to try it out safely in my head.
I love this too.
As I ran through this serviceable 4 minutes, my wife stared at me emotionless. I mimed panicking and taking the scenario to its logical conclusion of crushing eggs with a heavy item, and she continued to look unimpressed. As I reached the end, she said, "Why don't you use the packing shelf like everyone else?"
What?
What, I asked, is a packing shelf? It turns out that the shelf that runs along the window past the checkouts is there for customers to take their trolley of paid goods to and decant everything into bags at their leisure. This can't be true. I'd seen the shelf, sure, but I just thought it was for cool Europeans to lean against and chat. Did everybody but me know about the packing shelf? Sure enough, on my next visit, I observed people putting scanned items back into their trolley, paying, then heading to the packing shelf to put them into bags before leaving. I am such an idiot. How could I not have realised?
So is this specific to this supermarket? Well, I'm just trying to think of how our Iceland is, and I don't think there's any such facility there.
Well, you know what? I haven't been to this supermarket regularly enough to notice it, but the one that I go to, it does have a kind of a shelf, and I always just assumed It was for people to rest. I don't know what I thought it was for. And I've never seen anyone use it for that. Because I don't see how it saves that much more time.
No. It's not about the time. It's about that terrible feeling that I have constantly about having to get them in the bag so as not to hold up the person behind you.
So it's the shopping's coming down. And instead of putting it into a bag in your trolley, you're putting it into just in, straight into the trolley.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Which is much quicker.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Because you're not thinking about... Yeah, what's going to squash what?
Yeah. Okay.
This sounds brilliant.
Okay. Well, he continues. Idiot I may be, but set in my ways, I am not. So over the next few weeks, I made full use of the packing shelf, amazed at how much easier it made the process. My new regime worked and it served me well until one day. I was putting my items in the trolley on a rainy Sunday morning, ready for deferred packing at the aforementioned shelf, and everything was going well. When I came to pay, the total said £660. Never mind, it was just an admin error by the till person who got mixed up between the code for cucumbers and the quantity of ceramic pots and had tried to charge me for 66. He voided it off and corrected the error and we had a little chuckle together. Just the one pot this time,
I think. Does this mean he was buying 66 cucumbers?
No, I think the code for cucumbers was 66.
Oh, okay, sorry.
All very textbook and I'd come across as a functioning adult. Good stuff. The issue came, however, when I moved away from the checkout. I left the shop and walked to my car in the rain, only realising as I opened the boot that the disruption to the routine had shorted out something in my brain and made me forget to visit the packing shelf. All my items were in the trolley next to the empty bags. Realising I couldn't go back in now, I knew I had to place the items directly into bags in the boot as fast as I could so everything didn't get drenched. Meanwhile, a man in another car pulled up beside me and flicked on his indicator. He'd seen me.
I don't even drive, but this is giving me anxiety.
It's horrendous. He'd seen me returning to my car in the chock-full car park and wanted my space. Panic came over me and I started to pack as if my life depended on it. The rain grew heavier as I jammed cans and boxes into the bags, all while this man sat waiting and waiting. I didn't time myself, but I think it had taken me around 2 months to get almost everything into the boot when the netting on a bag of oranges split and they rolled under my car. As I knelt in a puddle to try and retrieve them, the man in the car correctly judged that I was an idiot, cancelled his indicator and drove off to do another lap of the car park. Every time I pack my shopping, I will now see the look he gave me as he shook his head and drove away.
That's brilliant. So what I think is... You know, your stuff about the items is your club set. And then this traumatic story, this is your Edinburgh show. You could Hannah Gadsby it, you know, because there's some trauma in there.
Yes. There you go, Freddie. Come on. In your own head,
in your
course.
Own, yeah, of course.
Maybe
yeah.
to the wife, but yeah.
Are we done?
Yes.
Then I should give out the email address.
Please do.
It is hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle?
Yes.
How's that Substack of yours?
Oh, thanks for asking. Oh, it's a swear word in the title this week, so I can't say it.
How bad is the swear word? Oh, okay.
I'm not saying that.
How are you approaching swear words with Rudy?
I tell you how I'm approaching them, and it's a complaint towards you, in fact, because I was trying to listen to your... They like to watch podcasts while driving my car with my son in the back.
Well, that's idiotic.
Why is it? And I, because I really wanted to listen to it, and he was watching TV in the back, and I thought I'm going to get away with it. It's the effing and blinding. I had to turn it off.
Can I ask, do you hear those words come out of my mouth with any regularity?
No, your wife.
Yeah.
It's all your wife. Yeah. Your potty mouthed wife.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Has he said a swear yet?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we are. We're not like Victorian, but the way we try and approach it. So Gene has it in his head. There are bad words.
Yeah.
Right? And he knows they begin with letters.
Right.
So he'll go, I don't know what the F word is.
Right.
And I'll just say, here's the thing, Gene. It's just not, there are always better words to use. Mm. And it's just not a nice word, especially in a kid's mouth. And that's how we approach it. But this has made him very angry about swear words. So if somebody says one, and we've got a system where if he hears an adult say a swear word, he tells them they have to donate money to Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital.
Oh, great.
Right? But even the milder ones make him very angry.
Good.
Well, it's not good.
Because I like it.
So he's a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
And we watched the new episode this weekend, which was fantastic.
Oh, right.
Oh, some floods of tears.
Oh, were you? Maybe I should watch it. Maybe I'll go back to it.
Did you like it when David Tennant was in
Yeah,
it?
I loved it.
And was that the Catherine Tate here
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Then you will love this episode.
Okay, I'll watch it.
And there's a very moving storyline involving her teenage daughter.
Oh, okay.
Played by Yasmin Finney, who is wonderful. Anyway, and it'll give you something to talk to your brother about.
Okay.
Although, I don't know your brother well, but it seems to me there are two types of Doctor Who fans.
Mm.
There are types who just enjoy watching it, and there are types who enjoy feeling rage about any way in which it's changed since 1964.
Oh, I don't know where he sits with that.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't answer that. Sorry.
Okay. Anyway, why was I saying
Did
that?
You say 1964? Okay, yeah. I don't think he's one of those.
Okay.
I don't think so.
You know, that's not necessarily people who were alive in 1964.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's just people who like being angry about change.
So you're trying to tell me that the new Doctor Who has got a mild profanity in it?
So it's got hell a few times in it.
Oh, is that considered to be...
Oh, yeah, that's the H word, and Gene gets really angry. He was angry at John Lennon for singing... No Hell Below Us in the song Imagine.
I think I say what the hell all the time.
Yeah, I have to explain context to him. So with hell, I say, look, I don't love, you know, I don't think that word's got any, it doesn't need to be in your mouth, but it's just a mild one. I wouldn't get so upset about that. But he's very binary in the way that he thinks about these
right,
things.
Right, right.
And because it's against the rules, now he's extremely angry. And I think Catherine Tate says arse at some stage as well.
Oh, is that a baddie?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it? He's not,
and I wondered if this came from my mum, because we weren't allowed. So we will say fart, actually. Fart is a word in our house that we're very comfortable with. My mum, I could tell when she used to hear us use that word, I could tell like a little piece of that. Her heart just broke slightly every time she heard that word. Because when we were growing up, we had to call it a trump.
Oh, right.
Unless her mum came to visit and trump was to her like fart was to my mum.
Right.
We had to call it a pump.
A pump? Yeah. Really? Oh, this is... Wow.
So...
We always called it a pop-pop, which I think is quite
much
sweet.
Nicer, much
but
nicer.
But he got fart from school, so he just says fart now.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it'd be best to sort of like keep him wrapped in cotton and expose him to other children.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But I don't know how to handle this whole hell and bloody thing. It's... Anyway.
Hmm.
I'm getting sidetracked.
Okay,
here.
Okay.
This is your bit, isn't it?
It might be back to me.
Okay.
So, I'll give you the title, but yeah. I'm going to beep out the profanity.
Yeah.
They you up, your mum and dad.
Oh, yeah.
They make you... I've forgotten the next bit, but anyway. Anyway, it's about weird phrases that they...
It's like they fill you with the faults they have.
Yeah, yeah. They make you... I'm not trying to recite the poem here. this is my version.
I think it's out of copyright, so...
They fill you with like weird phrases that you think are normal.
Right.
And it's about something that happened to me when I was 7.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my Substack this week. You can find it. You can just put my name into Google, as I say every week. Or you can go to Substack, bit weird, quite normal.
I did that just yesterday.
And it popped up, right?
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it? And even if you spell it wrong, I think it pops up. So that's fine.
And do you have another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult?
I do. I want to talk about those verify codes that you get when you log into something on the internet.
Oh, this is interesting.
Is it? Go on.
Well, maybe I'll listen to what you got to say, but I had a text exchange with a friend about this recently.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll come to that then, yeah. So I'm building up to something that truly incredible happened to me, like amazing.
Oh.
Okay. So those verify codes, usually 4 to 6 digits, right? And they get sent to your mobile phone or your email to verify it's really you and not an imposter. I usually hate everything about these kind of online security gates. I hate the endless passwords. I hate those memorable words, memorable numbers. Worst of all, I hate those pictures divided up into grids where they say, click on all the boxes containing a sidewalk or a traffic light.
Yeah. Because what if like the corner?
This is the thing. I agonize over whether like, is that tiny bit of, does that count?
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure I always get it wrong because I always have to do it twice. Do you ever have to do it twice?
All the time,
I wonder if twice is normal or it's twice I'm getting it wrong because I don't go, you got it wrong. They just make you do it again.
Yeah, I heard that part of what is checking is not just like, maybe it's changed now with AI, but it's like it's the way in which you're selecting the squares and the speed at which you're doing it and the order in which, like, if you were a machine, you wouldn't do it a certain way.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to try and like think, don't be machine-like. Don't be machine. I know. Be human, be human.
I'll tell you what that reminds me of. I think about this a lot, is John Ronson wrote, remember when, like, behind the scenes of the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire coughing major scandal?
Yes, yes.
And all these people who would try and get on that show.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was an automated phone system
that they
had to give their answers to. And they convinced themselves that because it was a computer, that if you spoke in a robotic voice when you're answering the questions, you were more likely to get picked.
That's insane.
So just thinking of all these people in their houses, like with a theory, like
the
speaking in
tapestry.
Robot voice.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm worse at than these grids is the recapture test where the writing's text, where the writing's all weird and you have to decipher it. It's often made me worried that I am one of these robots they're trying to keep out because I'm so bad at it. And it does make me think, like, I'm not so worried about AI now because it will never get past those grids with cyborgs because it's really hard for humans. And if it turns out I'm a robot, if I'm AI, like, you're fine, everyone. Honestly, you're all totally fine. Anyway, I hate all this, but I love those verify codes. Two reasons. The first is that brilliant thing when they're sent to your phone and then your phone started knowing what the text was and says, do you want to use the code from a text? And you just click on it.
So that is one of the greatest inventions.
It's amazing.
That is better than the wheel.
I think it is better than the wheel. I can't remember the process exactly, even though I probably do it about once a day. I'm such a bad robot. But I just love that it's so easy.
Do you hate it on the rare occasions when it doesn't do it?
No, because I also love it when I have to look at the code, then remember it, and then go to the website and put it in. Oh, the mental challenge of it. It's like a mental workout. I love it. I'm aware that there are people who've done stuff like memorize 70,000 digits of pi, but it's an intellectual challenge that I can do. And like people say, oh, we used to know multiple phone numbers off by heart, like the pre-2000s, every day was this great brain training exercise. I say, no, we've got verify codes now that we've got to hold in our brain for a few seconds that it takes to go from the email or the text to those login boxes. Anyway, I'm coming to the brilliant thing that happened. I was logging into something. I can't remember what. My brain is all flabby from not having to remember phone numbers anymore. And I got the verify code sent to my phone. I looked at it. Six digits. Listen to what these six digits were.
Yeah.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
You are kidding.
No! It was consecutive numbers. It was so amazing. Like, has this ever happened to anyone else ever?
Oh my goodness, have you done the lottery this week?
Well, I'm really concerned about this. Because I think this is my big number luck. Like, I've used it all up now. Like, I mean, I don't do the lottery. I guess that doesn't help. But I feel like it's equivalent of getting a phone number assigned and all the digits being consecutive or ending in 2, 4, 6, 8 or your birth date being in it or ending in 007.
Yes. I've got a friend whose phone number ends in 007 007 and she regularly gets cold calls.
Whoa.
From people offering to buy her number.
See, this is just as good as 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 or winning the lottery, isn't it? And even though I won't win the lottery now because, yeah, my numbers luck is used up, I'm always going to have that consecutive number verify code.
Wow!
What was your friend saying about them?
No, well, this is me. So I've got a friend who's like very numbersy.
Mm.
And my question was, do you think that the verify codes aren't just like a random six-digit number, but they're drawn from a pool of catchy numbers? Because I always find them easy to remember.
Do you?
When I have to go from one to the other.
Numbers?
Yeah. So my question was, are there catchy numbers or not?
No. Because can you have a six-digit catchy number?
But I think they're all catchy because you go da-da-da, da-da-da. But I do like look at them and think, oh, that's a good number so often.
What I love about that it might have been someone's job, like, okay, you've got 2 hours. I want you to like make a list of all the catchy numbers to put into our verify code generator.
It occurred to me. I wonder if there is such a thing as a catchy, you know, obviously there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or whatever, all yours. But I wondered if there were catchy numbers.
And what did your friend say?
That is something that he's thought about a lot and he doesn't think so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I love that he'd thought about it a lot.
Me too.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Skip straight onto Quandary Corner.
Okay, great.
Because I have an appointment
fine.
That I need to attend.
That's totally fine.
So.
I'm going to, first of all, say we need some more quandaries, mm-hmm. please. I know I was bragging some time ago about how it was over. We're overflowing. Those days are over.
Like the European milk lake and butter mountain. What was it? Like, I can't remember.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you remember the milk mountain? No, it wasn't milk mountain. It must have been a butter mountain.
No.
It was like there was an excess of butter.
Wow, can you imagine?
I can't remember. I'm going to have to look this up or somebody can write in about it.
Maybe later.
So we'll forget to look it up.
Yeah. So the first one is tackling the subject of, you know, chuggers, charity. That's actually, you know what? That's a horrible word, chuggers, because it means charity muggers, and that's really horrible.
Yeah.
So those people that try and collect money from you.
Yes.
But it actually contains the solution within it.
Oh, okay.
So it's from Sarah. I've just had an interaction that went incredibly smoothly and wanted to tell you about it as a possible solution to a quandary I think we've had many times, which I think we have. I've certainly had it myself. I was coming out of my local supermarket and there was a, in inverted commas, chugger in the entrance foyer. You know, the type that you start talking to him before you know it, you've signed up to a monthly direct debit of $50 to their charity.
Hey, what a great smile you have. Yeah,
some of them are so good at their jobs.
I love your coat. All that stuff.
The worst ones are the ones that come to your house and are just so charming. That the house ones are the most charming ones.
Send Sarah to the door.
Oh, yeah.
Shuts it down.
Oh, I mean, it's not so me. Impressive. Not me. Oh, it's so hard.
Like, they can't get the compliment out or anything.
Really? She shuts it down. Oh, yeah. God, I had to stand there doing all the compliments.
None of this. They're going to be back in half an hour after bedtime.
Oh, God.
You never see them again after Sarah's really? Spoken to them.
Oh.
And the weird thing is she's not rude.
I need to hire her.
Yeah.
I clocked her early, so I put my hand into my bag for my purse and walked towards her. She looked at me with those chugger eyes that say, please stop and talk to me, and I could feel myself being drawn in. Then she asked, just 2 minutes of your time? My reply, I can give you a cash donation, otherwise I need to be on my way. You know what she said? Oh, sorry, I can't take cash. Now, I don't know if this happens in the rest of the world, but here in New Zealand, apparently they can't take cash.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, you know that already?
Yeah.
Have you tried this before?
No, because I never carry cash.
No, but you don't really want to give them cash. You're just saying they're not going to take it.
But
so
what
you
if
fake
you get
it.
A corrupt one?
Oh, then you go, you're corrupt. I'm going to report you. This was a trick. I'm an undercover chugger.
Yeah.
I think that's great because you're showing that you're willing, but you haven't got time to fill in the forms.
Yes.
I mean, they will say if it's at your house, they're going to come back later just to warn you. But
otherwise, I'll have to be on my way.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about getting one of those signs?
What signs?
Like no hawkers.
Oh, you know I've had that before. I made my own and it stuck to the letterbox. Oh, I know. Wow. It was horrendous. It's gone.
Did it work?
No, they still put leaflets through. It was horrendous.
But what about the people knocking on
I don't get many hawkers, to be honest. So I think in the whole like 5 years I had it up, I didn't get any, but I probably didn't get any the whole 5 years after I had it down. So
you get those people like selling rubber gloves and sponges and stuff.
Occasionally. Mm. Yeah. And they've come from their on day release from prison or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they are.
Yeah, you think they are.
No, I just don't know. Right. Like, this is awful. Mm. So if they are, I want to help them.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I think, this is some tale you're spinning here.
Right.
But then I imagine, like, if you were a confidence trickster, you probably wouldn't be putting your energy into sponges and rubber gloves.
No,
so why?
No.
I'm dubious of that. I don't know.
I think they're usually genuine. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next one now from Ellen, Protector of the Realm. For the past couple of years, I have volunteered for the local branch of a well-known cat charity as a cat fosterer. A few months ago, I moved house, and at this moment, none of the rooms are suitable for keeping a foster cat in. So I decided to take a break from fostering and asked if there was anything else I could help with instead. The branch coordinator let me know that they did have another volunteer role available. The lady who'd been managing the direct rehoming scheme wanted to give it up. Would I be willing to take that on? I said yes, and the next weekend went to the house of this very friendly 77-year-old lady, let's call her Betty, who was delighted that a youngster like me wanted to take on the role. I'm 32. After an excruciating hour of her painstakingly showing me how to edit the website and an equally painful ride home where she asked me why I didn't have children yet, I thought, okay, that's all done, and I know what I'm doing now, so I can just get on with it. After a week, Betty sent me an email to see how I was getting on. We hadn't actually had any new direct home requests, though, yet, so I told her, nothing yet, but thanks. I was confident that I would be fine when I did receive one. Then the other email started. One or two were vaguely helpful, introducing me to other volunteers or letting me know about other local services I could refer people to. But others were just repeats of info she'd already shared, followed by random updates about her life. For example, I have a dental appointment tomorrow. I went to the circus at the weekend. I've just been for a swim. Being retired is such fun. Sometimes with photos attached too. I never know how to respond to these emails and usually just say something like, thanks for the info, Betty, with no reference to the bits about her personal life. Betty has said she wanted to give up the direct rehoming volunteer role because she was too busy, but it now seems that she spends more time emailing me than I do on the actual role. Worse still, she will sometimes see I've added a cat to the website and send me feedback on what I've written, or say she will email it to our contact at another rescue, which I've already done as it's part of my role. How do I politely tell Betty that I'm perfectly capable of doing this quite straightforward volunteer role without her help, that I don't need her checking up on me, and that in the nicest possible way, I'm not particularly interested in hearing about what she's up to at the weekend? I signed up to manage a scheme to help cats get into new homes, not to manage the previous volunteer. Any help, much appreciated. Hannah, she ditched this Betty. Poor Betty. I mean, I can't help but think, lonely, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's very busy.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes people are busy for a reason, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
There's a big sad hole.
So I am feeling some sympathies for both of them, actually.
Yes. So, sorry, can you remind me who sent in the email?
Ellen.
So I feel a lot of sympathy towards Betty, but Betty is not Ellen's problem or responsibility.
True.
Now, part of me, whenever I start thinking like this, thinks about the you know, the fabric of society and the connections we have and the ways in which we're responsible for each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I don't think that is insignificant. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who, if you give them 2.5 centimetres, they'll take a metre.
Yep.
Because I'm a metric guy. And I think like Betty is one of them. Mm. I mean, I would have some sort of nice enough, but fairly abrupt cut and paste responses.
But that's what she's doing. She's just saying thanks for the info.
Thanks, Betty. Everything under control this end. Mm. All the best.
Is it worth saying, look, making a joke of it, I feel like you're spending more time trying to help me than you actually were on the role. Please don't feel like you have to. Honestly, just let go of this. I've got it under control now.
Oh, it's 11:11. Just as we're recording this, I feel like I need to make a wish. Hang on a second.
I hope you made a wish for Ellen.
I don't even believe in wishes or superstitions, but that thing is in my head.
Okay, I never knew you could make a wish. This is new for me.
11:11,
no,
yeah.
I thought you just went, ooh, 11:11.
No, and I have to stop whatever I'm doing and make this little wish in my head.
Oh, okay. Right, back to Ellen.
Back to Ellen.
I think you could make a joke of it.
Here's what I think. You don't need to break up with Betty. Mm-hmm. You could just ghost her.
Oh, just stop even doing thanks for the info.
Because I sometimes think about some of the email I receive. Mm. Like, it's like people pushing stuff through my letterbox. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mean like promotional emails from, say, Asda's.
Right.
I'm not replying to those. Thanks, Asda.
Good.
But I am saying, like, I just don't think every email you receive warrants a reply.
Okay.
And I think you have been very clear in the way you've responded to Betty,
yes,
so far.
Yes, you haven't let her
that,
on.
That you, don't, you haven't let her on, though. that you don't want a friendship, to be harsh about it.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
you know, Betty isn't your job or your responsibility.
She's not.
And you can be kind, but, you know, you don't need to. Yeah, you could have boundaries. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be okay for you to stop replying to Betty's email. Or I think having like 3 responses that you just cut and paste and send back. I mean, I know that feels like admin, but it's a tiny amount of admin.
I think you could wean her off gently. So every other email you reply to, then every third email, then every fourth email until it's gone completely.
Yes.
And then if that doesn't work, you could just cut her internet cable.
Would you know which one it was?
Of course not.
Yeah, that's the problem with cutting people's internet cables, isn't it? Betty doesn't strike me as very 4G.
No, she doesn't.
Or 5G.
No. Oh,
I hate 4G now that I've got 5G.
I haven't got 5G.
Do you know what?
What?
Can't tell the difference.
Oh, okay. But you hate 4G
now. First couple of days. Yeah. So, oh, my goodness. How did I ever live with 4G? Mm. Now, can't tell the difference. But if I ever see it's gone from 5G to 4G, it's like, what?
Is it the equivalent to getting that little circle? Yes. Or like that? Yeah. What was those letters? ENPG? Or something? Yeah. I can't remember now.
So have we dealt with the whole Betty situation?
I hope so. I truly hope so.
Ooh, Betty.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you have a quandary, send it to us. And sounds like we need them.
Mm, we do. Please, please send them.
hello@adriftpodcast.com. And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening. Do send us your stories, send us your quandaries, support us on Patreon, patreon.com/adrift. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took our photos. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. And we dedicate this episode to the memory of Sharon's Everywhere. This comes from Roxanne Bates. Hello, Roxanne.
Hello.
Good to hear from you. I would also love...
Well, she sent in something else, but she also her mum sent something in because she got married recently. Do you remember?
Yes, of course
and
she
her,
did.
Her mum was the one who tucked her knickers into her...
That's right.
Her skirt into her knickers.
Yes. Roxanne says, I would also love a... Right, so this is a response to the one from Mum, or the thing that she sent in.
Doesn't matter.
We're getting into the weeds.
Yeah.
I'm really Bettying this, aren't I? I'd love a podication and a new plaque on the dead dog memorial wall. Oh, for our beautiful dog, Bailey. He was with us for nearly 15 years and was my first and only ever pet.
Oh, wow.
He was a very good boy.
I bet he was.
Unless he could smell food. And then he could be a very bad boy. But overall, he was the sweetest natured, most loving dog. And it is hard to believe he is not waiting for us, ready to wag his tail when we get home.
Oh.
But he's waiting on the other side of the Rainbow Bridge.
I hope so.
Wagging his tail when you're dead. And cross over into the...
That's something to look forward to.
Afterlife. Yeah. R.I.P. Bailey boy. We miss you. Oh, Bailey sounds lovely.
Yes.
Roxanne, here's what I want you to do. Wait an appropriate amount of time. Feel your feelings. Let your grief be your grief. Get another dog.
Oh,
it's going to bring you a lot of joy.
A very good boy or a very good girl.
Yeah. Because that's what Bailey would want.
Do you think?
I don't know. You know, people always say that, don't they? Like Sarah will say, if I died, you know, I'd want you to find someone. But, you know, she wouldn't be the love of your life like I was. We'd both know that. I was the Linda to your Paul McCartney.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe Paul prefers Nancy. I don't know. But anyways, but this is what Sarah says. Right. Whereas, I'm not so sure.
I think it's different with dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, because, yes, for all the reasons you might think.
Yeah.
Bailey sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
The dead dog memorial wall.
Oh.
If you're a podcast listener rather than a listener to the old radio show, if you have 5 minutes, go on YouTube and type in dead dog memorial wall, boy least likely to.
I listened to that, not recently, like maybe 5 years ago or something, and I thought, I like this
it's
song.
It's really good.
I like this song.
So we used to do a feature on the radio show called The Dead Dogs Memorial Wall, where we would have like a wall where we would pin up memorials to plaques, in fact, to furry friends who are no longer with us.
Mm.
And we Annabelle would read them out. We'd have like Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven played on the pan pipes, playing in the background with like echoes of dog noises as you did it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very nice.
It was very moving and beautiful.
Yeah, and then you would read out these memorials to dogs. And then we got together with this band, Boyly Slightly Tour, who are great. If you don't know them, look them up. They've got a good Christmas song, actually. George and Andrew. Do you remember that one?
No.
About George, Michael and Andrew Ridgely meeting up in a pub on Christmas Eve.
Oh, I'll have to listen to that. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they've got lots of good songs. And anyway, Annabelle wrote a song for the dogs. And then they
made it a lot better.
Made it a lot better.
A lot better.
And a fantastic animator whose name I can't quite bring to mind because it was a long time ago.
It was.
Made a wonderful animation video to go with it.
Do you remember the staff meeting? You don't remember the staff meeting?
Oh, God. Oh my God.
So there was a staff meeting. It was only for DJs, only for presenters at the radio station. And Clive, who was really excited about this video because they, you know, set aside some budget for the animator and like was really pleased about it and like loved it. He played it.
This was our boss.
Yeah. Sorry, the boss. Yeah, he played it. The cold, dead response to it. Like the painful silence. Like they hated it.
Yeah.
They hated it.
Yeah, they did.
All of them, without exception, they hated it.
Yeah.
It was like painfully sitting there where you did something like put your heart and soul into it. And everyone was just like, so bad.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's good. Yeah. It's good. And they were jealous.
They were jealous. I just think
they probably annoyed at the budget, you know.
I just don't think we were well liked.
We weren't well liked.
They're just like a lot of them are different type of people to us.
Very, very different type of people. And they're better than us. I'm not saying that we're better than them.
Yeah.
Some of them, not all of them.
What do you mean as people?
Well, I'm just being nice.
Like better broadcasters, I think.
Oh, better at everything. Better people, better broadcasters.
No, I mean us.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, what are we? Better broadcasters or better people?
Yeah, I mean, some people might argue, well, it seems like a lot of those still have careers.
Yeah.
But oh, I don't want to get into it.
No, they're playing, you know.
It's a different thing.
We played the game differently and lost.
No, we won the trophy.
Yeah.
A few trophies.
Yeah.
And then wouldn't say went out on top. We could probably pull the plug a bit earlier.
Mm.
Yeah, like, you know, you've got to know when to leave the party.
Yeah.
And I think we left a bit too late.
We did.
But you're right, we're playing a different game.
Different game, yeah. And I like my game.
And I would say if you are a listener to that radio station, you're thinking, oh, well, such and such sounds nice. They're not. No. I don't mean that at all.
I'd say 90% are nice.
Yeah. The ones that are still there.
Yeah, I think. And actually, like 50% are incredibly nice.
Yes,
that's fair, right?
Yeah. And possibly the people you're thinking, you know, that you might be bringing to mind now, wouldn't have been there at this point.
Yeah.
Because there are some people who are there now who I think are great.
Both as
people and on the radio.
Yeah.
Who would have enjoyed that video and would have been into it.
But
you know.
Yeah, you're right. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, look it up and see what you think. See if you'd like given it a cold, dead response. Because I thought it was really lovely. Anyway.
But, you know, if your passion in life is playing an AC/DC record and saying what time it is.
Yeah.
You're not going to like that kind of thing. No. It's not for you.
You're thinking, like, what is this? Why are they doing this?
Yeah. And that's okay.
This isn't real music.
Yeah. This is what real DJs do. And that was the reaction we encountered in the room.
Okay.
By and large.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, there are plenty of people who wouldn't have reacted like that we've worked with over the years. Just that they weren't in the room that day.
Yeah. Well, it's been cathartic talking about it. Anyway. Thank you, Roxanne.
I'd completely forgotten about it.
Oh, I hadn't.
Not the video, but the unveiling.
The reaction. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. It was painful.
Yeah. So, if you'd like a podication, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. And Bailey boy, we miss you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.